This last week began the celebration of the Jewish New Year, known as Rosh Hashanah. It's a time of celebration, but also a time of reflection. It is the first of the high holy days of Yamim Ra'am, days of awe. Celebrated for 10 days before Yom Kippur, these days of awe, we are currently in them. This coming Wednesday begins a 25-hour period of fasting and intensive prayer. Often the entire day is spent in a synagogue service. It is a time when one can acknowledge their transgressions, also known as sins, atone and move forward into a new year. Faithful, one emerges absolved or cleaned of what has come before. In Unitarian Universalism, unless we adopt such practices as Yom Kippur, we really do not have an opportunity for resolution and absolution. We do not have the confession of Catholics or any of the Christian absolution practices, including baptism, because we do not believe in original sin. I wonder, do we think that we're beyond sinning, always being ourselves, our best selves? Or are we beyond being absolved of our sins? Ultimately, I wonder, are we missing a possibility of atoning and being freed from our less than altruistic acts? I stand overlooking this abyss of sin and absolution this week because, frankly, it seems like our world might be going to hell in the proverbial handbasket, per se. Looking at politics, corporate greed, climate change, and self-focused consumeristic nature of our culture, I am brought to a place of pondering the seven deadly sins in action. If one did not grow up in the Catholic or Christian paradigm, here are the top sins that you might want to avoid. Lust or lechery is intense longing, is usually thought of as intense, unbridled sexual desire. Lust could also mean simply desire in general. Lust for money, power, other things that considered to be sinful. Or gluttony. Think Roman orgy. It is considered a sin if the excessive desire for food causes it to be withheld from the needy. Gluttony can be interpreted as selfishness, essentially placing concern with one's own impulses or interests above the well-being of others. Greed is like lust and gluttony, a sin of desire. However, greed, as seen by the Christian church, is applied to an artificial, rapacious desire and pursuit of material possessions. Sloth, one of my favorites. I think we all fall into this one from time to time. It has always been defined as a failure to do things that one should do. By this definition, evil exists when good people fail to act. Wrath can be defined as uncontrolled feelings of anger, rage, and even hatred. Wrath often reveals itself in the wish to seek vengeance. Think driving in traffic. Envy, like greed and lust, is characterized by insatiable desire. It can be described as a sad or resentful covetousness towards the traits or possessions of someone else. Pride, it is identified as dangerously corrupt selfishness, the putting of one's own desires, urges, wants, and whims before the welfare of other people. Does sin exist? Sin is something we tend not to think about all that much in Unitarian Universalist congregations. Rarely do we talk about it. We do not have to agree about what sin looks like, but we can see a pattern of behavior in the seven deadly sins, can we not? I see a pattern in the simple statement, the putting of one's own desires before the welfare of other people. I waver dangerously close to the edge of a sinful abyss and self-flagellation. It is the Reverend John Murray, 1741 to 1815, often referred to as the father of universalism in America, who pulls me back when he calls for clergy to give the people not hell, but hope and courage. This one quote changed the face of worship in New England, and ultimately I believe it is still changing religious understanding. Universalism contains the belief that ultimately we are all saved from the ravages of sin. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I wonder, are we? I believe that we UUs are a combination of striving ever towards goodness and doing good in the world, and the belief that sin can be forgiven if we fall short of being good. Evil. All throughout history and across this planet, evil acts have been perpetrated against those who many thought of as the others. Those who did not fit into a European pattern of behavior or belief, they have been shunned, excluded from community, and excluded from sharing property or profit. The others were considered to be heathens, considered to be pagans, considered to be witches, and more. The others were enslaved and murdered, and if one looks deep enough, you might just find the sin of greed is somewhere in the root of condemnation. I have spent some time thinking about the many egregious acts that have been perpetuated throughout history that one might consider sinful. The list is far too long to cite, but I start with your friend and mine, Columbus. A man who is about to be honored on the 14th of October, who maybe doesn't really deserve to be honored. Columbus and his merry band of greed-filled privateers, maybe better referred as pirateers, traveled along the east coast of America, pillaging, exploiting, killing, raping, and human trafficking of the first peoples. In no way should Columbus be revered for finding the Americas or its treasure. It is easy to say, no, 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 no. We will not revere Columbus anymore. But many are silent, maybe uncertain of our own ancestral white complacency that implicates us. We have time to say no. We've got a whole week to say no to Columbus Day as a way to atone for the atrocities of our New England ancestors. Maybe instead of a statue of Columbus, we should erect a statue of Metacomet. Do you know who he is? He's King Philip. Believe it or not, accept it or not, we benefit and profit on the backs of the first people, as well as the imported slaves and indentured servants who came before us. Greed in the name of expansion, exploitation, and genocide on this land has its karmic claws dug in deep within the soul of this land. War and battles were waged on these lands. Right here, where we sit, raged the King Philip's War. His war was waged because of colonial injustice towards the native people. He went and spoke. He went and pleaded. He went and begged. King Philip's War, 1675 to 1676, was not a localized clash as the Pequot War of the 1640s or 1630s, but a full-scale warfare involving most of the New England region and many of the indigenous tribes, a total war that made no distinctions between warriors and civilians. And it was not certain the colonists would win. The war ended the largely stable and in many ways mutually beneficial relationship between the colonists and the Indians that had endured some five decades. It was also an especially bloody war, the bloodiest actually, in terms of the percentage of population killed in American history. So the bloodiest war in American history. The figures are inexact, but out of a total of New England population of 80,000, counting both Indians and English colonists, some 9,000 were killed, more than 10%. Two-thirds of the dead were Indians, many who died of starvation because the colonists had burned their corn and their crops so they could expand their holdings. People starved. Indians attacked 52 of the New England's 90 towns, pillaging 25 of those and burning 17 to the ground, also destroying their food stores in return. The English sold thousands of captured Indians into slavery in the West Indies. New England's tribes would never fully recover. That blood soaked into this land. We eat it in the vegetables that we pull from the soil. That karma is literally part of us. The pain and grief still echo through our history and in the woods around Sudbury, if one listens closely enough. How do we move forward and atone for the sins of the settlers of this land? Because, my friend, I do think that we must atone in order to move forward in peace. This week, I spent time thinking about the many wars for profit or exploitation that have taken place on this planet. To name just a few, Think Hitler imprisoning and killing the non-Aryans and undesirables across Europe, ethnic and religious cleansing at its worst. Think of the slave trade and genocide throughout Africa, the wars between Muslim people because of religious lineage. Think of United States participation in the war machine for profit and exploitation, selling US-built weapons of destruction all around this planet. Think of the greed of the US and international oil barons bleeding this planet for profit. I'm currently reading Rachel Maddow's new book, Blowout. If you haven't started reading it yet, you should. It's really good. It's about the oil and gas industry in our country and the world and how it affects us every day. In my humble opinion, I believe that greed is the sin of our times. I know you've heard me say this many times before. We can see it happening right now as many people gather on our southern border hoping for a better life. Many separated from their children in prison for an extended time without representation. Our government is looking for a way to profit on the misfortune of others. Private prisons, anyone? We, you and I, know it's wrong, but we expect someone else to do something about it. Our politicians, we hope, will act, but mostly not, because they have bigger fish to fry or money sealing their lips. My friends, what we suffer from is apathy, a perfect example of sloth. We do not act because we do not know how to act, even though we know that we should act. We post on social media, but there, where is our outrage? Some go to the border and are arrested and made an example of with sentences of over a decade because they offered water to those who crossed illegally. Over a decade for offering water. I would imagine that this type of sentence is a warning shot even, an effort to keep us at home and silence about injustice. Can we stay silent? Many of us, the majority, look at our world and accept a certain amount of bad behavior in our communities and our country. Let's be plain and simple. What we're seeing in the news is sin. And in large measure, as long as the people in this country get their bread and circus, they continue to turn a blind eye to the daily deeds of despicable leaders. Sin and bad behavior have become entertainment in the news. If it bleeds, it reads. The statement fake news is meant to have us question the accuracy of journalistic integrity. What is true? What is real? The validity of science is even debated. A day without lies and outrageous illegal acts from the White House is like a day without our Wheaties. What can we do? Because we need to do something. And our vote in my fearsome soul feels like it has already been stolen by ruthless and evil people. We are losing our voice if we do not demand that our hard-earned tax dollars are used not for bad dealings, but to better our world. My favorite voice of reason in the public square was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who shared that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. If injustice exists anywhere, it is a negative force and is harmful even to places where justice currently exists. If injustice exists anywhere, if justice exists anywhere. I would say that it does exist in this world, and it exists even in our own neighborhoods, in our highest halls of power, but equally so does injustice. Exactly 100 years after King Philip met a comet, tried to drive the colonists out of New England, another war, the American War of Independence, 1775 to 1783, was waged not far from here. Our own Sudbury militia marched to war right down this very conquered road. They had learned the fight from the Indians, and the colonists won against the British, won their right to rule themselves, to step out from under a monarchy that endeavored to exploit this new world's residents and resources. Almost 100 years after that, another war, again over greed, exploitation, and human trafficking, began in this country, 1861 to 1865, the American Civil War, a battle many would say of good against evil. In the midst of the battle for freedom, Abraham Lincoln would issue the Emancipation Proclamation, explaining that all persons held as slaves within the rebellious states are and henceforward shall be free. The closest that war was waged to England was in northern Pennsylvania, but militia from all over these New England states answered the call to fight for freedom. Many lost their lives or limbs. But this was just a just war, in my opinion, to free the oppressed. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects us all indirectly. Since the Civil War, large swaths of people still remain oppressed and enslaved in the private prison of cheap labor complex. Discontent and injustice has left us angered and vulnerable. I believe because of that, we have been under siege from individual and organized domestic and foreign terrorism since March 8, 1782, when there was a mass execution by scalping of 96 unarmed and pacifist Native Americans by the Pennsylvania militia. Since then, there have been a total of 203 acts of domestic and foreign terrorism on the United States. That does not include many of the ways that our government tries to imprison us. Think gerrymandering. From planes being flown into Twin Towers to bombings to mass shootings, we have been under attack, and fear has become the state of our union. Our own people have been and continue to be radicalized and placed into service against us. The war between good and against evil exists. It's being played out on a daily basis, right here, right now. So imagine my surprise this week when I heard from the highest office in the land a threat of civil war if the president were to face impeachment. Let that sink in for a moment. The president of this country called to radicalize his base to start a civil war if he faces impeachment proceedings. A direct and very specific threat. Some explained that the president was just kidding. But was he? Many of us laugh because the words that come out of the president's mouth are so outrageous that no one can possibly take him seriously. But friends, there are so many out there who do take him very seriously. The leader of the free world is willing to bring war to our own streets. In many ways, this is a personification of evil itself. What are we going to do about it? Vote? Definitely. But what else are we going to do? We need to do something, right? Fear and numbing tactics are used against us every day, but this threat feels like salt in the wound to use another civil war to control us, because that is exactly what he's trying to do, to divide and conquer, we the people. Religion and politics. How daring of me. As I said 2 weeks ago, we need a voice of reason for peace. For solidarity, because our house is on fire, decries Greta Thunberg, who, I have to say, no kidding, Greta, we're getting it from all sides. It is not war that we need, but peace and tranquility. Can we wage a war against sin and fear to embrace another way of being? In a book called Custer Died for Your Sins, an Indian manifesto, the author explained this: never has America lost a war. But name, if you can, the last peace the United States won. Victory, yes. But this country has never made a successful peace, because peace requires exchanging ideas, concepts, thoughts, and recognizing the fact that two distinct systems of life can exist together without conflict. Consider how quickly America seems to be facing its allies of one war as new enemies. Peace requires exchanging ideas, concepts, thoughts, and recognizing the facts that two distinct systems of life can exist together without conflict. We can no longer imagine this that we do an experiment with governance. The rule of law is a way of life that leads towards our very survival as a democracy. Humankind has fallen again and again into difficult times, times of fear, maybe even sinful times. But friends, Reverend Murray reminds me over and over again that I am here to give you hope. I'm here to give you courage, to invite us to walk together into the promised land, to atone for what has come before, to help one another, to find a way forward, to discourage profit over people, and instead be absolved from the sins of our forebears, the sins of this land, with the assurance that we can do better. We are already trying to do better. We can look out beyond the horizon and see a different future, but we must begin by choosing to be inspired and by willing to act for justice. Inspired by this inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny, personified in our fifth and seventh Unitarian Universalist principles that can and will unify us as all if we dare to give it a chance. For unity is our hope and courage is our resolve. I close with the words of Khalil Gibran speaking about good and evil. Hold them in your heart. Of good in you I can speak, but not of the evil. For what is evil but good tortured by its own hunger and thirst? Verily, when good is hungry, it seeks food, even in dark caves. And when it thirsts, it drinks even of dead waters. You are good when you are one with yourself. Yet when you are not one with yourself, you are not evil. For a divided house is not a den of thieves. It is only a divided house. You are good when you strive to give of yourself. Yet you are not evil when you seek gain for yourself. You are good when you are fully awake in your speech, yet you are not evil when you sleep while your tongue staggers without purpose. And even stumbling speech may strengthen a weak tongue. You are good when you walk to your goal firmly and with bold steps. You are not evil when you go thither limping. Even those who limp go not backward. You are good in countless ways, and you are not evil when you are not good. You are only loitering and slugging and sluggard. In your longing for your giant self lies your goodness, and that longing is in all of you. Dear ones, let us stretch ourselves, reach out towards our giant self, towards goodness. As we atone and be mindful of Yom Kippur on Wednesday, let us also be mindful of what an Indigenous People's Day might actually look like and the healing it could bring to this land. This week, may we follow our own way. May it bring us to a place of peace and constancy together. May we see the traps and trappings of this world along the road and choose to pass them by. Or better yet, let us leave the treasure for another in need. Together, all of us on this planet, maybe we decide to seek solace, absolution, and happiness, walking a road towards a place filled with truth, filled with compassion, filled with equality, and may we call that place justice. Let us take a moment in silent reflection and meditation. May it be so, blessed be. Amen.